Those who are not read anything, I'm suspecting our visitors, they are from hotel. I'm seeing that they don't put anything in front of them. We do have a light breakfast. We do allow those who couldn't have breakfast that they must grab, as long as that those who are presenting, others must have something to eat. Let me take this opportunity to greet you all. Too many of us, it was just a hectic weekend as usual, as honorable members. I'm suspecting that even the leader or the leaders who have visited us, they are like politicians. They don't rest and relax because of the transformation of the sport. I'm here today, first and foremost, I must apologize that whilst one other day in past months, they were supposed to meet with this committee on behalf of the parliament and the committee. We are apologizing because the program of parliament cancelled whilst we were ready. And I appreciated that whilst you were coming, you have already given us the information. It is very rare that our people who are coming to present to us, they always came with their presentation on the day. But with you, even on that day that we've cancelled the meeting, we're already having the documents. Please keep it up. I wish that with other people who are coming, we always start with a bad note to say that if now we are giving us your presentation on the day, how are we going to interact? You want to rob us? Thank you, the leadership of SARU. Honorable members, I'm suspecting that this is an interesting meeting. I'm seeing even the members of this committee are all here. There are those that was, they've been having other tasks, not coming to the meeting. Unfortunately, my minister was here last Tuesday. I'm welcome you all. I'm seeing even some of us who don't know any other name for media in my language. I'm saying it's paparazzi. This committee is not the committee that is always having the media, but today I'm suspecting they are very important because we are not important, but we have people who are very important to South Africa who are seeing them. We are not inviting you that you must come in every meeting of us because we don't ask permission. But I'm seeing that you have interest. Some of media people, they wanted me, honorable members, to interview me. I don't do that before the sitting of the committee because I've got a mandate to say what the committee is saying. With due respect, we have our media officer here. They've been harassing you. We have done well. Not before the meeting, because I must reflect on the presentation and the discussion of the members of the committee. With those words, the agenda is in front of us, honorable members. Any other thing that you want to add, or anyone who's proposing that we must adopt the agenda? Honorable Adams.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody present. Yes, I propose that we adopt the agenda as is. Thank you.
Any seconder? Honorable Christian.
I second the motion. Thank you, sir.
Been adopted. The first point is briefing South African Rugby Union. Point 1.1, progress made in transformation, including women's rugby, participation by persons with disability, provincial demarcations, and future transformation objectives and transformation operational plan. I'm suspecting that the agenda is in front of you. Let's start with that point and now is the time that we do welcome our visitors. I do have the names in front of me. We welcome, let me do this because I won't welcome you according to your seniority. Can you greet us and tell who are you? Thank you so much.
Madam Chairman, I'm Andy Cahoon, the General Manager for Corporate Affairs of the South African Rugby Union.
May I ask that who's leading your delegation according to your seniority, and then from there everyone must introduce, because this one, the ship of this committee, is led by myself. So I want the first commander that will be driving together. I want according to that. Thank you. With your respect.
Thank you, Honorable Chair Kyulani. Mama, thank you very much for this privilege once again. Rugby is an integral part of this country and the people of this country. And rugby wants to be and wants to continue to play an important role in the social fabric of South Africa. So we come here feeling very privileged to sit before our political leadership of the country, and we thank you for the opportunity to talk about issues close to our heart and close to your heart. I am, for my sins, I'm the president of South African Rugby Union, and my name is O'Regan, or as I'm commonly known, Regan, and my surname is Hoskins. I am from eThekwini, KwaZulu-Natal, and not from Cape Town, as a lot of people make the mistake. But it's really nice to be here. Thank you very much, and we look forward to working with the Portfolio Committee on Sport, madam. Can I introduce all of us, please? Thank you. To my right, two places to my right is Mark Alexander. Mark is the Deputy President of SARU. And to his right, two places away, with the man with the grey hair, is James Stoffberg. He is the Vice President of SARU. And to my immediate right is the Chief Executive Officer of SARU. The CEO is Yuri Ru, and for his sins, he comes from this city. Then on the far right and the extreme right is Basil Haggard, who's the Chief Financial Officer of SARU, also comes from Cape Town, and also from this lovely place, the mother city, is Kaya Maetwa, who is manager in the office for government and corporate social investments, a project of that nature. then next to the, in between the Vice President and the Deputy President is Samantha McDonald, who manages the transformation issues. And Samantha's been and will be a very important cog in the wheel for us in terms of that particular issue, which is important to SARU. Then on my left, certainly not least, is Mervyn Green, also from Cape Town, born and bred. Mervyn is General Manager Transformation and Strategic Investments and other projects of that nature, and does a massive amount of work in terms of our transformation program. And last but not least is our Communications Manager, Andy Kaloon. So, Honorable Chair, that I think I've not left out anyone. And thank you once again for allowing all of us to be here.
Did I
miss you? Oh. Mervyn was leading me here. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, President. May I take this opportunity to start with the whip of this committee, because this is the first meeting with you. You need to know who's who in this committee. I'll start with the whip of this committee. They must also introduce themselves.
I'm Strike Radokoma, a member of this committee from Gauteng.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Khai Zimusi. I am from the Northwest in a little town called Vryburg. I'm here with the ticket of African National Congress. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning. My name is Dave Abrams, and I'm from Gauteng. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tutu Malana from Malanga Province, serving in this sports committee.
Good morning. My name is Sophie Turner from Eastern Cape.
I'm Soli Malazi from Limpopo.
Good morning. I'm Bewan Mutega, EFF Member of Parliament from Gauteng.
Darren Bergman from Gauteng.
No. Oh, ma'am. Hello, I am Bongi Jamu from UKZN. Thank you. I've noticed from the account of their political parties, our affiliations, we don't have any problem. If anyone like Musisi, ANC, like Honorable Mutega, EFF, we didn't say that there is a way of introducing yourself, like I'm Beauty Zulani from the Eastern Cape, the chairperson of the Committee of Sport and Recreation. I thank you. Let us kick the ball. The one who's going to take us through.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the hearty welcome. The presentation will be done by myself in the first part, and I will lead up to a certain stage where the CEO will then take over. Madam, it gives us great pleasure to present on behalf of the South African Rugby Union on the agenda received from you. So the first point, we would just like to give you a brief overview of what we have done since unification. And we all know that the perception of the is that rugby hasn't done much. However, we would like to prove the opposite. So what we have done since 1992, and I just highlight the significant impact that we have shown in terms of changing the demographic profile on and off the field of play, providing access, and most importantly, allowing people to be part of the game and provide them opportunities to upskill them. Since 1998, we have been led by a black president. We have numerous black players that have graced us throughout the world, have played in many Rugby World Cups, which we were victorious in two of them. And the biggest challenge that we had was to change the demographic profile of our domestic competitions and national teams. And we can quite confidently say that we have succeeded in representing South African national teams with 20% to 75% black representation over these years. That ranged from our junior teams right up to the Springboks. Women in particular has boosted this statistic for the last 3-4 years dramatically. And then also a milestone in our endeavors to transform the game was when the minister brought out his first EPG report in 2014, and rugby came out as the code amongst 5 senior or the so-called B codes in the country as the code that has scored the best mark. Although there were a few things in that EPG report which we were told that they are not happy with, and we went back and we addressed those issues and gaps, which I will allude to on during the presentation. But enough is not enough. We are open and honest if we say that we have done introspection and we have certainly pinpointed the gaps, the aspects that we have to address, the imbalances, and this is exactly what we have done after that. If you look at this, the next slide, one can see that our domestic competitions or major competitions went down the slide from 36-37% down to as low as 20% from 2008 up till 2012-2013. Certainly, we cannot be happy with that situation. If I can point you, so we're more or less there, and that's where the turnaround came in. So what did we do? We went in November, we held a big transformation in Davao where we had the Minister of Sport, all the MSCs of sport throughout the country, and all other relevant stakeholders gathered in Johannesburg, and then we sat down and we fleshed out all the issues in terms of rugby's transformation agenda. That we followed up with numerous workshops throughout the country, consultation process with our unions. We've done that, and then we came up with a strategic plan that mapped out everything in terms of what we endeavor to do, and that we will show you in a nutshell what we have put on paper and what we have committed to. And as you would know, by this coming Friday, our leadership will then sign a memorandum of understanding with the Minister of Sport committing rugby's program to the country and say this is exactly what we're going to do. So we will gladly would like to highlight some of those aspects. So we went also and we presented to SASCOC, and they were happy with what we presented to them. And then also another milestone in rugby's history was the adoption of this transformation plan through our General Council in December 2014. Just to show you in the next slide, madam, how serious we were in terms of what we want to do. We've introduced back in the game rugby targets or quotas, whatever you want to call it, in some of our major competitions, the Vodacom Cup and Currie Cup, and already we could see the turnaround in 2014 and the progress that has been made in terms of that. Because we believe that is a starting point where especially the black boys can get opportunity to showcase their talent, to show that they're good enough to play at the professional level. And they have done exactly that. So in terms of the transformation plan, ladies and gentlemen, we believe in South Africa Rugby Union that transformation is just not about numbers on the field, because this is how we get viewed and people see South African Rugby Union as a as an organization, let's not transform it because of that. What we're saying is a multidimensional plan that we put on the table, affecting all areas of the game. And I will allude to that in the next few slides. The one positive thing is it is a measurable, it's a measurable plan, and it's time-bounded. Because we say by 2019, in the next 5 years, we would like to achieve the following, which you will see in the plan. And out of the five-year plan, we have an annual operational plan which stipulate the activities that will be conducted by the organization. Just to give you a brief summary of our objectives in terms of the plan. Sorry, just before that. Just to back up the plan, SARU went on to develop world-class technical programs, and we can proudly say there's no other federation in the country, sporting federation in this country, that do have these kind of programs. We developed an online footprint program which can track all our athletes and management involved in the game and see how they progress. We developed game analysis programs called Stratus, the first in South Africa. We developed a coaching blueprint which will enable us to play a South African brand of rugby. Then we also developed a talent identification application online, which will enable our scouts and our talent scouts and selectors out there to ensure that we pick up all the talent that's available. And then recently, as last year, we developed a huge database called e-filing, which is administered by Samantha sitting over here. And this is not the real SARS e-filing. It's a massive database giving us all the information of how our landscape looks outside the office and inside the office of SARU, and we know exactly what's happening within the country in terms of the almost 400 rugby players and administrators and coaches that we deal with. So by the press of a button, we can give you any kind of information you would require. Thanks, Andy. So on the objectives of the plan, it's very simple. It is aligned with the National Sports and Recreation Plan. It is aligned with government's transformation charter, and is exactly how SARU is going to conduct its or implement its strategic plan. The first and almost, I believe, the most important dimension is the demographic representation, and SARU has already shown some serious business in terms of changing the demographic profile, particularly on the field, but also we're working very hard off the field as well to ensure that we transform the game there. Then access. I know the Minister of Sport, this is one of his fortes, and we have embraced that since 2012, where the Minister declared in Parliament that he will ensure that school sport will be his priority, and SARU took that on as its priority in itself. So we went down and we applied our minds and we came up with a very, very aggressive and great grassroots development program, which I will just talk you through now. How are we going to broaden the base and expand the game, especially into the township areas and into the rural areas, which we have done. We've piloted a program last year, which we will show you some of those results. Skill and capacity development is another area which we are very serious, and we are very proud to say that we are the leading rugby federation in the world in terms of educating and training of coaches within world rugby, and those statistics speak for itself. So there you can see we look at the full development of all our human capital. On the performance level, we are in business and serious business to compete. And when we go onto the field, we go out to win. So that's the nature of SARU, on and off the field, to ensure world-class performances, and we do have a strategy to get to that. Community development, social initiatives, we understand that transformation is not only about the game, it's about transforming society, and therefore we have urged our 14 SARU provincial unions to buy into this very, very important aspect of the game. And I can tell we can already show some great results, madam, that we have really go and dug deep into those communities and reach out in terms of all our awareness programs to ensure that we contribute to government's initiatives like that. Our CSI programs is only directed to those kind of communities. In terms of corporate governance, we can proud ourselves amongst the five sporting codes that was audited on the EPG report. SARU came out as the best organization, sporting organization in terms of governance. But there is still room for improvement, and we're working very hard on that, and we do have a strategy to address our governance issues. So in a snapshot, what is this plan about? The key drivers of this plan is to ensure that we increase black participation at all levels, that we increase black participation in our national teams, that we increase black participation in our national representative management team. That is the supporting staff, from coaches right up to the doctor, the physio, biokineticist, and all of that. And also to increase black coaches and referees involved at higher levels. And we are already succeeding in those four key drivers. So what does the picture look like now in terms of black representation from 2008? As you've seen, we were right down there in the mid-30s, and our vision is to get, by 2019, we want to get there so that we can say that we truly reflect the demographics of this country. So that's our target in all our domestic competitions, our international competitions with our national teams, whether it's 7s or 15s, that is where we want to be. And we're serious to get there. This is just a little bit more detail, madam, in terms of our implementation plan. These are all the activities that we've stipulated for 2015, as you can see there. We put in those targets for all our major domestic competitions and also for the national teams. And I can tell you now, all of those are achievable. So we didn't put something there that's unrealistic. We said to ourselves, these are the things that we're going to do. Is it achievable? Yes or no. And this is absolutely achievable. In terms of the access, we have already embarked on a very aggressive expansion plan where we would like to recruit 60,000 new players to the game, and the program that we have now rolled out countrywide is the Get Into Rugby program. This is a worldwide World Rugby program that's been implemented for over more than 70 countries around the world. And during our pilot project last year, madam, Chair, is that we have recruited 24,000 new players, of which very important and notable is that we have recruited at least 12,000 new girls to the game. For the first time, we are really serious in addressing that problem, and we started at the bottom of that pyramid. In terms of the skills and capacity, once again, that's our target that we're putting there to deliver on level 1, level 2, and level 3 coaches, 7s coaches, administrators, referees. And once again, those targets are all achievable. In terms of performance, this dimension mainly refers to the monitoring and management of our black athletes from an under-16 level to ensure that they come through the ranks into senior professional rugby. And these are all the KPIs that we've put together, which we will closely monitor within our unions and within the national office. Candy. In terms of our community social development, these are the programs that we're going to embark on, all the awareness programs stipulated in the national sports plan. Job creation plans, CSI programs, and then also very important that we have to structure community rugby rugby in the 52 municipal districts, and we will show you that we've already started with that program as well. In terms of governance, these are the things that we're going to try and improve in terms of governance. We have to upskill our workforce in the unions. We have, in particular, have to look at black administrators to get them through the senior professional ranks in terms of that, and then also other capacity building programs such as board and council members to upskill them, and then also the whole issue of the anti-doping and safety programs within the game. Women's rugby, madam, I believe this is a very, very touchy and sensitive issue when it comes to this, and I can remember last year you were telling us where were the women, or that was the previous chairman. We can proudly say we took back and we went back with the idea that we will implement some of those programs, and we will ensure that women becomes fully integrated and that they can feel part of the game. And just to highlight a few things what we have done thus far, our challenge remains to get up to a 50% women representation within the game at all levels. So that's part of the strategic plan. And then also one of the significant things is that what we've done this year is that we have contracted the best women's players. We've placed them in the academy with the National Springbok Sevens team. They get the same training, everything that the boys get, the girls get as well. That resulted into the fact that they have qualified to play on the World Rugby Sevens Series for women. We're there now. We haven't been there the previous time when we were here, madam. In terms of our national 15s team that represented us in the World Cup for Women's Rugby in France last year was already 78% black. So we've already exceeded the target that we set ourselves to be reached in 2019. That's 50%. We're already at almost 80% black representation. So our women's team is fully transformed, and they're on their way. So what we're trying to do now is to establish an elite and high-performance program and give them more professional training to ensure that they compete with the best in the world. Okay. Then the Springboks Women's Sevens team already alluded to the fact that they have qualified to play on the World Series. That is a major achievement. The Women's 15 has now been initiated. 6 youth training centers around the country. This is another program that we have now implemented. So what we bring a more professional approach direct to the regions. So where we picked up the talent players, we don't have to take them out of the particular region and put them in a high performance center somewhere else in one of the big metropoles. We train them up there where they are, whether they're in the Eastern Cape, in Transkei, we can bring them into that youth center and give the proper training, conditioning, and whatever is needed to ensure that the athlete gets developed to a professional level. So for the first time also, another significant program that we're bringing in for women's rugby is the underage grade girls competitions, madam. At the national level, we are introducing an under-16 competition and an under-18 elite youth week, same as the Coca-Cola Craving Week, so it will be for girls, to ensure that we provide the right platform for our girls to perform, which we can then see how we can take them forward into the game. Disability is another aspect which we think we have really took up the challenge, and we are proud to say that we have 2 disability associate members in wheelchair rugby and in deaf rugby. Wheelchair rugby, as you would know, is a very popular sport, especially up in the northern part of the country. They do play international. There is a wheelchair rugby world championship, which we support that national team and prepare them in terms of their competitions. And recently we have also adopted the Deaf Rugby Association, which we look after. So that's what we do. We support them administratively, give them guidance, give them everything that they need to ensure that they are operating at an professional level. This is where I need to exit the for my part, madam, and Cyril will take over on this.
Thank you so much. It was so informative. Honorable members, we have seen most that this whole 30 minutes or 45, it was on point 1-1. What do you say? If the information is like that, you want, you will be noting what they are presenting. You want me to give them that they must all present, and then we'll be engaging in discussion, taking notes. Let's do like that, honorable members. The second point on our agenda, the next person. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable chair, honorable members. Transformation specifically around demarcation and then the regulation of foreign players in our domestic league. In terms of our own regulations, we are allowed two foreign players per franchise in our domestic competition. And it's as it stands at the moment, you know, we're only utilizing two. But to get back to where we are in demarcation, as you know, there's been a change in the Act, and in terms of the Act, we've got to operate within the new demarcations and compete on that level. We have adapted that. We have changed our constitution so that we're able to organize our rugby within the demarcated areas, and as it stands at the moment, we are in all 52 districts, municipal districts in this country, and you can see that by the graph that is presented to you, and that we're present everywhere and within every municipality within this country of ours. And we've added a full list of all of the rugby communities and municipal districts for you as an example and to be able to digest. Moving on from the demarcation to the foreign players, which I've just alluded to, we try to discourage that as much as we can. You know, we want to create opportunities for our own players. We want to create opportunities for players to participate in our own domestic league. We do play an international sport. It is especially within the Super Rugby, it's a multi-country sport, and there's a number of South Africans playing in Australia, and there's obviously a couple of players playing in our league. As it stands at the moment, there are only three foreigners playing in South Africa for Clarity, CAR, of which we are a member, which is Central African Rugby. We do not regard players out of Africa as foreign players, as we see that as part of our development course in terms of rugby in Africa, to afford them the opportunity to come and play in our leagues. You would notice that Namibia is playing in our Vodacom Cup. Kenya was there as well, but due to some political issues within the union, they have to withdraw from the Vodacom Cup, but they will be back in the Vodacom Cup next year. But currently only three players out of 200 playing in the Super Rugby, which is a really, really low number. They have to apply to the executive for permission, and we only provide permission if we are pretty sure that will enhance the product and is not withholding a place of a guaranteed domestic player. In terms of our provincial academies, we were very lucky in an application to the lottery a couple of years ago. We applied for 8 academies. We got the money for 4 academies. Those provincial academies is very specifically aligned to keep the players within the region. We want to stop the exodus of the players to the bigger unions with the more money. Try to help those smaller and developing unions to keep their players. Honourable members have to acknowledge the fact that we do live in a free market world. And even though, you know, we have the players in the academies, they will always venture to where the money is a lot more. It is a professional sport. But for the moment, our biggest emphasis is actually to assist these unions in developing their players and keeping them. As you can see, we've got them in Boland, Southwestern District, Eastern Province, and Border, those being the member unions where they are. And then there's 12 private provincial academies nationwide under SARA's jurisdiction. What we've done now is embarked on a full process of due diligence on all of those private academies, ensuring that they actually adhere to our criteria in terms of our transformation implementation plan and that their goals and objectives are the same as ours, and that they're not the typical academy that is there. You know, we refer to it as a sausage machine where people come in and they pay a lot of money and they exit after 2 years and they've not been upskilled. They have no working opportunities and they end up actually nowhere. As you can see, the stats in front of you, you know, 98 players were trained in academies on a full-time basis, a ratio of 80% black players. All academy players study or participate in scholarship programs. It's an extremely important, very much like the Varsity Cup, we are there to educate our players as well. I think probably one of the biggest criticisms we can deliver against professional sport as a whole, not only rugby, be that soccer, netball or anything else, is that we have people within the professional environment to the age of 25, 26. Then the sport spews them out and they've got no skills, no education or anything, and they're left in the world and most likely with very little money left after that program. You know, our programs include conditioning, academic studies, life skills, mentorship, medical services, nutrition. 94% of these players participate in provincial age groups under 19 and under 21 in the Curry Cup. 24 played at senior professional level, Vodacom Cup, Curry Cup and Super Rugby, and have been contracted into the various unions. And employment was created for 41 persons, coaches, managers, medical personnel, outside of the normal realm of those unions. So the provincial academies have worked for us. Our lot of money has actually run out on that, and we're now funding it ourselves in an ongoing process. We'll keep on knocking on the door, but the reality is, I mean, there is a lot of codes in the country, and everybody needs some help. So we are going on a sponsorship level to that and see if we can get private money for that. It is an ongoing process. We are very proud of what we're doing there at the moment. You know, 160 players will form part of these four academies with a ratio of over 80% black again. And hopefully we will bring the players through the structure so that they can play on the national level. If we can hit a ratio of 60 professional players, that is quite a high ratio. If you take into consideration that without rugby, you know, in a given 2 year period, we will utilize not more than 50 players on a Springbok level. We will utilize 200 players on a Super Rugby level. Generally, those players will play for 5 to 6 years. Having an entrance level of 60 players every year is quite big. It means there's 60 players that actually need to leave before they can enter. So that it's quite a big ratio. We will get to a situation where there's an academy in every region, and that we can help to develop the players according to that. Mervyn, I'm going to hand back to you for your development programs.
Thank you, Yuri. Back to me, Madam Chair. In terms of our governance, these are the specific programs that we're rolling out. We are proud to say that we have a very very worldwide training program in terms of administration called Clubwise, which we now implemented starting last year already, and this year we will continue with that program. So that will build massive capacity in terms of the administration of the game. Also, the training of our chief executive officers within the unions, the senior and middle management, all of them have already submitted their programs to us, and we provide them the funding and also the necessary programs where needed to give them that support to ensure that we build that capacity in the unions. Also, in terms of player welfare, there will be education around that, and then also in terms of employment equity and preferential procurement. These are two very important aspects of our transformation plan. And we have to upskill and educate our union structures in terms of how they're going to handle that and get to the targets to ensure that we nationally achieve what we have set out in the plan. In terms of participation, I've alluded to the Getting to Rugby program, which we are looking at recruiting up to 60,000 new players. And the most important of that, we're starting with a long-term player development program, which is a scientific approach to our development program. We haven't done that in the past, but now certainly we are looking in terms of providing those support to the schools. We know that the physical education has been taken out of schools, so we do have a very, very good plan with the curriculum that we're now offering to the schools throughout the country to ensure that we have that scientific underbelt of the game, right from the age of 6 years old up till 18. Targeted community township leagues, one of the ministers, the very, very important issues that he had with all sporting codes is that there's not enough children that play the game or play sport, and this is what exactly what we are doing. We have now programs and funding behind that to all our provinces to ensure that, that township leagues, in particular rural areas, that the kids are going to play there. And we will monitor that very closely. And also in terms of organized tournaments and competitions within those in those categories, we will provide some funding to all our unions to ensure that they do embark on those kind of programs. Okay. Once again, in terms of our training and education, these are all the levels of people that we want to train at those various levels, coaches, referees, administrators, social community is all the awareness programs that I've alluded to, awareness campaigns against AIDS, HIV and AIDS, awareness campaigns against drug abuse, women abuse, environmental aspects, and then also job creation within our programs, mass participation programs in joint ventures with NGOs within the communities. And the performance level, we do have our high-performance program, which is a very successful program, which we have piloted in three unions last year. We are rolling out nationally. That's the ICAWI program. We had our second national ICAWI week, where we invited provincial teams selected from our townships and rural areas to come and play at the national level, similar to what we have at Craven Week. Then we have our targeted schools, Coca-Cola Schools of Excellence. We have identified 30 black schools in the country, which we have given great support throughout the last 3-4 years to ensure that we get the best talent out of those schools. And then also our elite development program with the elite squads at under 16 and under 18 level are already 50% black representation in those very important category.
Honourable Chair, in terms of our governance structures, we've laid out the structure for you there. It's the General Council. It meets 3 times per annum. There's 2 representatives of the 4 member unions. SARU's president is the chairman, and this is our highest authority, and if you want to equate that to a normal company, these are shareholders, to which we present our annual financial statements, our competition structures, and our annual report. And you'll see their mandate, and I'll reflect their mandate just after this in another slide. The board of SARU, 7 members elected by the General Council. The moment they get elected, they have to resign from their member unions. We have 2 independent members on that. We've got a representation from the player organization, myself, and then obviously the CFO in terms of executive roles on that council. And it drives the strategy and direction, looks after the bottom line, recommends appointments, reviews performance, manages the business. And this is like a board of any normal company. We then got our different committees as they stand there. It's the audit and risk and the HR and remuneration. We've worked really hard to get all conflicted parties out of these meetings. And like in any other company, these are now completely independent members, which I will allude to just now. We have gone to the market and got people that actually have the correct CV and the correct qualifications to actually serve on these. And then you've got all of the other normal committees as depicted by the Companies Act and King III, and probably with the exception of an ethics committee, but we have given the roles and responsibility of the ethics committee also to the audit and risk committee as part of their terms of reference. You can move on. Just the mandates, apologies, this is an addition, just to give you, this is an addition to the presentation that you received, just to give you the mandate, which we summarized in that little clause in the previous ones. Effectively, the one has got the overarching responsibility in terms of the organization, looking after the federation, and the other one has got to run the business on a day-to-day basis, has got the mandate to make decisions. We will send you this additional slide as well. Then, for instance, in terms of our finance committee, you know, terms of reference, internal monthly finance reporting, management of revenue streams, financial policies, financial results, members of the committee, Bootfuck, he's the chairman of the committee, hails from the province of Limpopo, former director, director general, Louis von Jenner, independent players, association representative, former executive member at Barclays Africa or APSA, Monde Tabata, another independent member, and then Mark Alexander as an executive member on that meeting. Audit and Risk Committee, looks after the business of assessing the risk and ensuring that we are within all the regulations and the laws of the company. Mpumi Domani, Raymond Fenner, Professor Edna van Harte, our newest member, Sino, that just joined us, and Mr. Pat Keane. So, as far as possible, very senior business people and understand the business. Our HR Remunerations Committee, Monde Tabata, Jonathan Goldberg, Nadia Mason, and Vic Christians, Vic, the year-old member and director of Ernst & Young, and also later on PwC. So as you can see, we went in strict accordance of King, and we've gone with independent members. National Judicial Committee, we've got Judge Lex Mpati there. Peter and Advocate Yanni Liver, all of them senior councillor members. We thought to add these slides to you just to give you an indication of who the individuals is, instead of just talking about the individuals, and we'll obviously provide you with those slides. Honourable Chair, that leads us to the financials, which I'm going to hand over to the CFO.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. I will just take it that the report has been read, and I think just as a broad overview, SARU's mandate is essentially to operate at not less than a break-even situation. We would like to show bigger profits, but at the end of the day, we do have to reinvest any surpluses we make back into the game in one way or the other. So the bottom line results of 5 or 6 million pre-tax profits, it does not look spectacular, but it has enabled us to at least over the years build up a reasonable level of reserves so that we are in a position to be able to assist and to reinvest, as I said, wherever necessary. So I think we have got very good controls in place. We are very strictly governed through the Finance Committee and ultimately the Executive Committee, and we do certainly provide them with regular and full information on our financial position and results at all stages. So I think that we are reasonably happy, but it has been a tough couple of years, but we are quite happy with new contracts coming on board from 2016 in particular, that we are able to build on the fairly solid foundation in terms of our finances, which we have, and we believe that we've got a good future ahead of us, both in terms of the professional game as well as the transformation and development aspects, which are an essential part of our business. So in summary, I'm happy to report that SARU remains in a reasonably good financial position. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, President, with your team. Now I'll be giving the honourable members to ask question clarification, except that I'll try, if I do have time, to ask question. The only thing that seemingly we are short of CVs for women to be in your executive. If the President at the end of the presentation and when I will be coming in, I'm noticing this, that if now we are saying that you want to look at 50-50, but with your executive, I must say it's horrible. You can't have no women in South Africa being on the structure of your good sense. But I do have some other questions, but I'll start with our members. But I'm noticing that when even we were introducing you, I'm suspecting that we do have capable women that can fill this bench. It's very ugly, my colleagues. It can't go on like that. If it's a question of CVs, we need to go deeper and deeper. And maybe in your constitution, I've heard that you have just changed it. It must be indicated that the executive must have a percentage. It's not easy. You'll hear even from us as different political parties, we don't want to practice that even in our political parties, but we'll be very sharp to criticize, but it's right. Now I'm saying that this question of 50-50 in South Africa, it must not be lip services, really. Each and every political party, each and every institution must apply. You know, we are just from New York. When you look at the stats, we are trying as South Africans to balance this question of 50-50. It's not easy, but we need not to do lip service. We are women of South Africa. Did you born with the skills that we don't have as women? I'm saying because I'm a woman. I can't just keep quiet when I'm seeing this. If it comes to a push, go and amend your constitution that no way that in your executive you will be just comfortable if you see that there's nothing is happening about their representation of women. I'm criticizing you constructively, but I'm telling you that it's not only you that we have that challenge. But if we are keeping quiet, you will be thinking that South African women are happy. I'm telling you, in our own political parties, we can criticize you, but we don't do it. And we are striving because we have a committee called the Multiparty Women's Caucus. By the time we suppose in South Africa to be number two, not or number one, but because we are not as South Africans taking care of this 50-50. With those words, I need the honourable members. I've got so many questions, but let me not start to ask questions. Let me give it to the members. I've seen the hand of Honourable Bergman, I've seen Honourable Malazi, I've seen Honourable Young Lion. I've seen Honourable Mutega. I've seen Honourable Sultan, Honourable Manana, Honourable, all of you according the role that you are sitting. At the end, after Honourable Mama, I don't know. We are all here. I was wondering why are you sitting there? Okay. And Honourable Storm, you are sitting as a stranger. I didn't see, but there's nothing wrong. With that order, that the Bergman.
Thank you, sir. I think you can see that other rugby is popular. Everyone thought the minister was coming today because it's all full today, but it's very good to have a full house. Chair, I must be honest with you that I think the SARU transformation is a long time coming. I think that it held a lot of great hope, but when I first read it, I couldn't help thinking that in actual fact, this isn't a transformation policy, it's actually a funeral policy in my opinion. And the reason I say that is that if we're looking at a SARU 2019 transformation plan, and you know, going through the plan, it really looks like another opportunity for quotas, which I think in the history will judge us as a quota system not necessarily working without a proper input process. Now, if you would look at all the successful models on transformation, there's an input process, there's the process, and there's the output. in this transformation policy, what we seem to have is interference on the input and interference on the output. And I think what we need to do is back one of the parts of the process and then make sure that that works and then watch it to finality. So if we're looking at schools rugby, which is already identified in the transformation policy as working very well, the transformation has taken place almost naturally there. Somewhere along the line, before it gets to the national team, there's a vacuum. And it's somewhere in this process that we need to be investigating that vacuum. I don't think we can apply a one-size-fits-all approach and say, right, 2016 we need 30%, 2017 we need 45%, 2018 we need 60%, and come 2019 we have our 50%. If you're looking at Vodacom Rugby, which we introduced in terms of, or we changed in terms of being a demographic, looking at demographics, and let's call it an almost, and I dare say it because I don't want to cheapen it, but let's call it an experimental league. The transformation there should be taking place far more aggressively than any of the other leagues. And if we look at the Currie Cup or the Super Rugby, I would be far more interested in seeing how that, you know, the quota system is applied in terms of that league to see how it translates into future revenue, future interest in the game. I think we make the mistake often of saying that we truly need to reflect the demographics of the country, and sometimes we miss the point that you should be reflecting the demographics of the interest of the sport itself. To give you an example, we talk about the Border Rugby Football Union. Now, that's at one stage, I think you had more vehicles than you had development officers at work, yet you were paying for both the vehicles and the development officers. SARU made an intervention. They sent someone to sort out Border Rugby, and for a while, we still suffered many consequences of that, of both the pre-intervention and the intervention, if I'm to be honest with you. I thought someone was waving at me. To this day, I see the academy, and I still wonder, you know, there's a lot of politics there. I think that it almost became a politicized union rather than a sports union. I need to understand, are we achieving our 2015 KPIs as a matter of interest? In terms of the Vodacom Cup, in trying to create an innovation, instead of just using quotas, why don't we have something innovative like awarding a bonus point to a team that fields the right amount of black players? It is almost like an edge, you know, you almost make it more competitive where a sportsman doesn't have to feel like he's just put there because of the color of the skin, and the sports doesn't have to suffer from any trying to force quotas down the system. Why don't we create innovation? I see that we're again looking at the national squad for transformation, and that's again, that would boil down to quotas. Now, if we have the school feeding system, we have the club's feeding system, and then we have the provincial feeding system. My own humble opinion is that we wouldn't need to intervene in the national sports team because there should be a natural feed into the sports into the national sports team. Now, the international community, and we've seen it with soccer, and I think we've seen it with cricket. The international sporting community is interested in competition and income generation and revenue. And we run the risk of possibly playing ourselves out of international prominence, should I say, by creating a one-size-fits-all approach. You know, where we're sitting and saying, right, it has to be 50% across all board. It has to be this 26. So for me, as another bit of input, I would suggest that let's leave the Springbok team out for now. Let's look at what's happening on the provincial level, on the club level, and on the university level, and the school level, and let's see how the input translates into the output. And finally, just to talk about the support staff, you know, I find it disheartening that we don't career map. Exactly as what the chair lady has said, you know, you sit on a board that does not necessarily look reflective. We should be career mapping people into unions and then career mapping them into management and executive positions. So it's almost the case of saying, right, in 2015 we draw a line in the sand. We want 50% of our executives to look like this by 2019. What are we doing to try and get people into shadow, both in the, on the board level and on the support staff level. On the support staff level, but on the school level now, what we're doing is we've got problems in that we've now got schools that we have super rugby, and you've got schools that almost reflect many unions of, them on the, of, the, of their own, and then you've got schools that can't afford to compete on those levels. So what you're having is you're having schools actually disengaging in the league because they don't, or fear of injury or fear of being humiliated by huge scores. And somewhere along the line, we need to look at that, if that's your input, and if this is where you're going to feed your future provincial teams, how do we level those playing fields? Is it another league? Is it creating a super league? Is it, instead of looking at age, rather looking at weight, looking at leagues done by weight and not by age? And have we looked at a possible adopt-a-school program where we take a previously disadvantaged or what you've classified as a township school and partner it with one of the super rugby schools to ensure that there's a sharing of facilities, a sharing of training, a sharing of coaches? So from our side, as I say, implementing the plan as is now, I think will be a demise to the future of the Springbok, the rugby as a whole, and especially international rugby. But please let me make it clear, it's all about transformation. There's nothing taken away from transformation. It's just how we get to the transformation.
You need to note the questions, because the whole committee is going to contribute, ask questions. I will ask that you must note. Honorable Motebe.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everyone. And let us welcome South African Rugby, you know, and their presentation. It is very much disappointing to find that from introduction, Chair, the top leadership that came here doesn't represent the democratic representation of South Africa. You can see they are all white males. I mean, this is a proof of how far SARU is in terms of transformation. And we are in the 21st year now of this democracy. And we are still getting lip service. And because we don't see practicals, we don't see actions. But the leadership is telling you what is happening in rugby. If you can't transform the leadership, how are you going to be able to transform and involve the poorest of the poor from the townships and the rural areas, the black and disability and women? Okay, let us leave the dominantly white leadership. Let's get to the ground. Chair, when talking of rugby communities, I see here there is rugby communities in Agro Lane in Gauteng. There is rugby communities in Skukuneland. I must be honest. I was born and grew up in Skukune. I spent the past 20 years in Agro Lane townships. I never seen a game of rugby in the township, black township. I'm talking of Tembisa here. I'm talking of Katlehong, Vosloorus, Thokoza, and around. I'm not talking about the cities. I know in those Genistins, Binonis, and all that, you will see rugby. But where you will find people who will help you to transform, it is not happening. So, I'm very much disappointed. The other point I want to make is on page 7, where the very same sentence which is saying it is not only about the numbers. Yes, it is not only about the numbers. It is about the qualitative numbers. Therefore, as a rugby, our son has got the responsibility to go and train, get numbers from those disadvantaged black women and men, disability people, so that we can have numbers there. It is about numbers, but qualitative numbers. It can't be that in this year, 21 years in democracy, we're still having the whole squad with two blacks, and then we always parade them as representatives of our transformation. We can't live. We come far, and I think, Chair, it is about time now, is enough, and then let the rugby field be filled by a rainbow nation, as it is the team of the rainbow country. And all the performance indicators, KPIs, on page 11, the targets on the management structures of black people are lacking activities, responsible people, and time frame. You know, any plan that doesn't have the person who is going to account to that and the time, that plan is just a show, sort of. It's not going to happen. Because you want to know who is going to account to what and by when. Because we are putting times here. When that time comes, we will ask, please bring Zaru here. Because they must come and tell us how far are they. That time they have put on the paper, it is you. So if there's no time there, how are they going to account to that? Yeah, I think I'll stop there.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Malazi.
Thanks, Chair. It's quite clear rugby is an emotive issue, and the state of rugby is an emotive issue for all of us here because of, you know, all good intentions to transform it so far have yielded very little. Hence, sometimes there can be skepticism about some of the interventions because, you know, this has been the elephant in the room ever since 1994, and many our interventions to date haven't been as decisively transformative per se. But Chair, the bottom line of this is that, you know, the big issue is that there is a strong perception that it is increasingly difficult for black rugby players to break into the national teams, whether be it junior national teams or the senior national team. But it is even more difficult for black players on the rare occasions they break into the team to keep their places in the team. And this goes at the root of all this sentiment about transformation, because ideally what we want is a national team, a federation and a union that is reflective of the diversity and the rainbow nation that my honorable colleague referred to. But I think even with the current plan, there are areas where those interventions are skewed to indirectly entrench the existing preferences. I mean, you look at the geographic location of the four provincial academies, and I'm sure there's enough of a debate to be made there, but if you're an aspirant rugby player from KwaZulu-Natal or from Limpopo or from Mpumalanga, the likelihood of having access to proper, decent facilities, adequate coaching is nil. It's nil because, one, the number of schools in those provinces that play rugby is shockingly low. I mean, in Mpumalanga, 3% of schools play rugby. In the Northwest, 4% of schools play rugby. And this is from the survey that you conducted previously. In comparison to almost 50% of schools in the Western province that play rugby, yet two of SARU's four rugby academies are situated in the Western Cape. So that for me represents skewed intervention, that why are your provincial academies not located in such a way that they would be far more accessible where there is far more need
of enhancing representativity and making rugby an easily available sport to many black and colored teenagers who want to play the sport. But in addition to that is the current state of school sports. You know, the historical nature of different resources that schools have is that your elite private schools will always have an advantage over public rugby playing schools because they have all the incentives to entice these upcoming players. And many a time history has shown is the players get locked up in the system. You know, many of them end up being bench warmers at their respective teams because they may, in as much as they may have been great players at their small unions, when they get into a far more bigger pool, being far away from home, those kind of things are factors that impede their performance. So when a young black teenager gets into the field, he's already hamstrung by so many factors other than their own performance that ultimately impacts on their performance, which makes it's difficult for them to perform optimally. And that is why there is a mismatch between the high number of quality young black rugby players from junior teams and the Springboks. And this is where, you know, the issue becomes with the respective unions, where players are able to break into the junior teams. They're able to then break into the senior teams playing the Currie Cup. But few of those are able to consistently hold their places in those teams. Hence, the drawing pool for black players, to be honest, for the Springboks is quite small because the availability of them is quite limited to those that are able to consistently perform in the Currie Cups. But also, Chair, you know, the issue that you alluded to in your introduction was about the lack of definitive gender representativity just doesn't go into the executive. It also goes into the subcommittees and the ad hoc committees of the federation. And that for me is an interesting area because there you're talking about independent people who are from, you know, outside the pool of your or of your federations. That if you looked at that the series of skills that was presented there without doing any bean counting, there are only two female chairpersons of, you know, out of 12 committees. I mean, that in there also is a demonstration that the intervention hasn't been decisive enough, because truth be told, the number of suitably qualified individuals from the corporate world and women is far much, you know, is far much higher than those that are involved in rugby at leadership level at their respective unions, where the executive council is drawn from, because you're drawn from all your respective unions. So I think, Chair, they need to demonstrate that in as much as these targets are there. And these are very, it's a very refreshing intervention. But any intervention without an instrument of accountability becomes a declaration of intent. And if those intents are not carried through, then what happens? So I guess the final question here would be, in light of all these targets being set, what happens in the events that they are not met? What would be, you know, the actions and the interventions that are taken against the union itself and against the individuals assigned to successfully drive through those targets in their respective portfolios? Because nowhere in the document does that state that, nowhere in the presentation does it state that in the event, and this is not from a pessimistic point of view, but it is from a pragmatic point of view, that if we were to come and hold you accountable in 2019, hopefully we'll be re-elected by Chairperson, that these are your intentions that you declared 5 years ago. This is 2019 now. You haven't met your targets. And it will be great if you do, because that would be in the best interest of the nation. But let's be realistic, as politicians, what would be and what are the current instruments you've introduced internally to make sure that as you approach that time, you are able to track, monitor, look, and then intervene? What are those instruments of accountability? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable, thank you, Honorable Malaza, Honorable President.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chair. Let me start off by making a few comments. We highly appreciate the intention, I don't know how effective it is, the intention to stop the exit of players from what I would call junior unions to the more lucrative ones, but you've got quite a battle there to fight because it's about money and career advancing. And secondly, we also appreciate the fact that the CFO said that he's comfortable with the current financial state of affairs. This augurs very well for availability of funds when it comes to development. That's how I understood it, because we do not expect that SARO would then be saying that we're financially constrained and therefore we're unable to advance the cause of the rugby when it comes to development. That's why I thought I should pointedly, you know, when remark about that. My last comment before I come to about four or five questions, is basically what I'm seeing here when I analyze the situation is that we're looking at three issues here. We're looking at transformation, we are looking at facilitating the development of the game of rugby in broad terms, and then we are looking at winning. Those are the three cardinal issues that we are faced with. That's what my analysis of the situation tells me. And I must say that from where South Africa comes, personally, I do understand that it's quite a call that you are faced with. Pressure from all angles. Now, given that situation, here are my questions that would kind of give an indication of how some of us think should be going about the game. How do you balance the strong feeling of wanting to win, both in Super Rugby, that's an international thing, as well as Springbok level? How do you balance that with transformation? I know this is not a new idea. Quotas have been mentioned as a possible instrument, but in practical terms, how do you do it currently? The another question that is ancillary to that is, how did you come to the year 2019? 2019 is a political year in the sense that that's when the next general elections take place. What was the idea of linking your transformation program with the end of the term of the current, you know, government, you know, and therefore this committee? To me, that sounds interesting. How do you evaluate the success or otherwise of your programs? Because I see under governance that you say, you know, where I've seen the notes that you made there. Can you give us a little bit more meat? We want to know how do you actually evaluate? And how do you deal, here is a hot one, how do you deal with the potential, if not actual resistance, of white players when it comes to transformation? That definitely is at the center of this whole thing. And nobody would convince me that it is not there. I've played rugby. I know how those white hookies must be feeling at this point in time. And would love to know how you're handling that, because if you're just handling it subtly, then maybe you're going to have a problem. Or South Africa will have a problem where we could be facing a huge exit of our white players into Europe and so on. That's why I want to know how you are, you know, handling that, because definitely there must be a problem of that nature. And what is the current percentage of blacks in the current council? Currently, I see you've got a grand plan going forward. I've already stressed the importance of my question on 2019. Currently, in that council, where each union, to use that term, you know, has got two representatives, currently, what is happening there? And Mchacha has been playing rugby since 1932. Would you say, I didn't want to say Transcat, but Mchacha is the center of Transcat, of former Transcat, has been playing rugby since 1932. If you were to look at the current status there, would you say
since 1992, there's been any significant improvement there. Why I'm asking this question, I was touched by the Sekukune story of the FF, you know, member of the committee, and says he hasn't seen. Now, there, we've been playing rugby since 1932. There's no dispute about it. Now, how would you say there are improvements in terms of facilities, the standard of play, and so on? That's why I started off by making a remark about the three, you know, concepts that you are driving. I think then lastly, why is Gouda having this perennial problem? Is it the people there on the ground who are not playing the game? I know there have been times when you spent a good old friend, Mr. Nola, he did his best for a period of about 2 years, and still when he left, we went back to square one. I served in that committee. We used to go to the provincial sports portfolio committees of our problems in 2009, 2010, and I believe they keep going backwards and forwards, because that is one area where you would get, you know, traditional, that's where you would spend a lot of black players and start playing the Arab, and then they spread on to the other, you know, provinces. How do you propose settling the border situation once and for all? Do you need government assistance, you know, and if so, in what form do you need it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sultan. Honorable Manana.
Good morning, members and our visitors. Chairperson, we are representing our country. So I will speak about the community out of school and the community in school. Let me start with the varsity cup rugby. Chairperson, our varsity, all our university, I can say all, since the transformation is not there, because all the top positions are occupied by whites. So sport as a human rights issue, the South African rapid transformation chairperson is supposed to have been concerned with the provision and enhance consent, I mean the rights, the rugby opportunity for every child in general, the black African and colored children in particular. So as I was saying, the top positions are occupied by only the whites. Very few blacks. You may find, like Pretoria University, you may find that it's only one black person who's participating there. And when I look at this, it's a good. They are good presenters. They can present, and the moment they present, you can think that everything is well. I'm looking even at our presentation, Jefferson. It's a good one, with the good presenters, but some of the pages, when I look at page 20 of the slides and page 24, I can, with my own philosophy, also when I analyze this document, it's like it's a cut and paste, and when I read it, there's some of the of these words are missing in that copy and paste stuff. Since we are a new committee here, we really need all the presentation in full so that we can know that now they go at this far. We are here for 5 years. We must see the transformation. Chairperson, I know, Chairperson, in my province, they've tried. I cannot say I'm from Mpumalanga. They've tried. We have pumas there. They even went to the deep rural areas, but it's only three. I can say they tried, maybe they are still going there, I can say that. Because they do have the challenges, as I'm talking now, especially the proper facilities in township, not conducive for rugby. And they are not getting enough funds, like the sports per se, we're not talking about the rugby only. As sports, because we know exactly that we want to get people united through sports. So when we talk about the funds, we don't say maybe the little that we have, we don't have to transform the sports. Really, we want to see the transformation in sports, Jefferson, going far in these 5 years, as you always say that. And the other part of my questions, you've been covered them, because you've started with the race age issue. I can just stop you. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable Manana, Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Yes, I just want to make a comment and say thank you very much for the presentation, but I'm sure I'm not wearing colourful lenses, but I think the executive presence today is sort of 50-50 if I look around. And we do need more female representation, but I think one mustn't be, when you look at a person's colour, then you mustn't be confused, you know, because there is a 50-50 that I'm seeing in front of me. Thank you. Yes, black and white. Our constitution says you're either black or you're white, no in between. Thank you. The committee visited Limpopo, and the federation identified four talented rugby players, which was placed in the Ben Foster High School. Ever since the placement, the union has subsequently failed to honour this agreement. If the committee can tell me why was it not honoured, because it's very important when we do identify our learners that we actually take them through the whole process. And also the community awareness programs in communities. How does this affect the rural areas? Do they benefit? And then also rural and urban, because rugby is something that needs to be throughout South Africa. Is it spread in all the communities, in all the provinces? Are there any hubs that one can go to? And then also on the, my colleagues have touched a bit on the school, but are there any school programs, school holiday programs, where kids can actually, when it's school holidays, that they actually go to these programs and participate? Then on the academy, it sounds very, very successful, though. What are the criteria used for these players, and how do they actually, do we see them entering into international level, or is it just a case where the academy is there, it's sounding well, but it's not really working? I must comment and say that the people with a disability, I heard that you say you are actually sponsoring them to international level. That is very good. And also I'd like to know how many of the people with a disability are employed and what type of disability it is, because it's easy sometimes to say we do have disability people, but then the level of disability that you employ. Thank you very much.
Honourable Abrams and Honourable Musi.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. And now quickly, Chairperson, my first question would be on there is something that they wrote, ID, talent ID. I'm very curious. It's about application of scouts and selectors. I'm curious to know how it just unfold on it then. My second question, Chair, is sort of a comment to indicate to you, Chairperson, that there is generally a wide acceptance of SARU plan for transformation, but would they proudly say the franchise commit themselves to this, the transformation? 98 players were trained in academies on full-time basis on a ratio of 80%. Can you confidently say that these players are heading somewhere and would be seen as professional players one day? Mm-hmm. And then fourth question is, how do you handle issue of racism? Like Honorable Sultan indicated, no one is going to deny that it is there. I've indicated when I started that I'm from Freiburg. Mm-hmm. It's the racism. It's Freiburg. It's just next to Dankendorp. You remember Dankendorp. So how do you handle issues like this of racism? Because it is there. But Chairperson, my perhaps last question, or the last but one, it's what Honorable Malazi indicated, that, you know, what is actually the intervention in a case whereby, you know, people don't commit or people don't react to transformation, that it's envisaged? What is it that it's been done? But I just want to give Honorable Malazi a shocking of the day. Here is a question that we asked, you know, 6 years or some years before me, that when are we going to get the provincial union rugby, you know, their constitution aligned to SARU constitution? It's a question that when I came here, it was asked. I remember at a certain point, I asked that question, and I'm still not sure how that was answered, when it's going to be addressed. That is my question, Chairperson, which then brings me, Regan, to who is actually running rugby? Is rugby being run by some people that are not here that you don't see? Some people who are hidden somewhere else who control rugby and are not seen or are not known? Because really, if the executive here are in control of SARU or rugby, they would have, at this point, have, you know, forced the provincial unions to align their constitution to theirs. And I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Musi. Honorable Mashomo, Mamoshomo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I come from KZN. I think the history of rugby in KZN was pretty very, very much
not there at all.
So I would like to know definitely just how many, because most of the schools in particular and communities in the rural areas still don't have, let alone the teachers in the schools. They don't know about this rugby, and therefore it is not implementable. I would like to know exactly what it is that the rugby union is trying, you know, to help the schools, particularly in the areas where I come from. And I would like to find out exactly where these academies are, so that one can also. Some of my colleagues have really covered me in some areas that I would have liked to ask.
Thank you, Honorable Romo. Honorable Larajon.
Chairperson, I also welcome the presentation by SARU, and I welcome their commitment to meet the target 50% by 2019. I mean, for me, it's good that it is SARU itself that commits to those targets, and I hope that the minister as well will be happy about that, as well as SASPO. I've got just few questions that will be helpful for SARU to look at, because some of them might be the reason why there's been a decline from 2008 to 2013. The reasons for that decline, it is important that you should look at the real reasons there, because that decline is quite sharp. The second area that needs to be looked at, which when I looked at the transformation that currently Triget is looking at, is the generic definition, and you are also referring to that, of generic black and black African. If you talk about the demographics, then you need to really interrogate that difference, because, and if you define it properly, then you'll be on the right track in terms of ensuring that you really address the disadvantage that were brought by apartheid government. I've been covered largely by some of my colleagues. Key areas that remain, as you haven't touched, is the issues around alignment to geopolitical as per the National Sport and Recreation Plan. For me, that is quite key. As you know, we still have got the challenge around Limpopo, because Limpopo does not have a franchise there. We have to define really whether we think Limpopo's when we had an oversight, members had the concern whether Dubus is indeed the Limpopo or Gauteng. So you might have to do a lot of work just around that. For me, I mean, it is either you must work very hard to reintroduce another franchise. The other question really has been covered is more work around the franchising, because that is where things happen. And the measures that you are going to utilize to ensure that they are in line with the targets that you have set. Because if the franchises are not going to commit to this plan, you are not going to reach this plan come 2019. The last one from myself is around the intervention by the minister, identifying schools that can give disadvantaged learners an opportunity to can participate where there are best facilities in the country. We went to one school last time, Rock Ferreira or John Forster, I'm not sure, where we were informed that it's the franchise of SARU that identified for black Africans to go to that high school, and the fees were not paid when we were there. I know that the Limpopo province will intervene, but we are worried because we'll be going there again on Friday. Whether those four disadvantaged students ended up being taken out of that school. So for us, it is important that we should have your views with regard to the current intervention led by the minister to ensure that the disadvantaged students get or go to best schools. Because at the moment, even your best players were produced by these schools that have got complete facilities. So if we are not going to ensure that we intervene through making the level, we'll end up still certain skilled students not having an opportunity to go to best schools with complete teams. For me, we would want to hear what is your take as well as the SARU. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Let me take this opportunity saying that these few months that you are in this committee, there's nothing that we are preaching. We are saying transformation, transformation. And on our first budget vote, almost of our good selves, when we were debating, we were saying transformation, transformation. We have been saying that we don't have any problem that the bigger cities, they do have a transformation, especially in your rugby, in your cricket. But the only worry with us is our rural areas that we don't see a transformation. I was listening when we are presenting. I'm asking an information that can assist us and you good selves, that how far have you gone to the rural areas? Because that information is not with us, and we're saying that you can elaborate. It will assist us in order that it being these members who are doing the oversight, we must feel and touch out of these offices, going and seeing your good work. We know that it was a struggle that you must have this document. Can we, on that note, saying that we know you have done an excellent job, because it was not accepted, especially in your unions that we are leading. But today we do have this. The only thing that we want to see this happening is together we can do more. If you cannot keep on giving us information, we'll be speaking the same language, that even your good self, you don't try to do this transformation, because you are saying since 1992 you have got challenges of demographic, and now we have started to take a lead of going according to municipalities. Let's confirm those strides that we are taking, that in municipalities you don't only look which will be appreciating on Nelson Mandela in Jason Town. You are not only look at East London, where also Iraq in a player's knees, and it's one of other provinces who have been key in rugby players. We must not look at only at Mdanzani. Let's feel the change that you want to do. 5 years, we want to be with you. We want your programs. And as we are going to take the oversight in these 5 years, we want that you must open your door, that you will call you and will tell you what you are finding on the ground. Surely it will assist you that even if you do have problems with the unions, on your own, being executive, we as executive in our own, in outside the government, even in government, but if we are not with the people, you can't break the walls. You need oversight by this committee. If you want to do what you are presenting, that members are challenging, it's right that this is a committee, we are just open. When we are criticizing, we are doing this to criticize and come with solutions. Those solutions that they are proposing, that they would want to see APC, will assist. For instance, if you look at this page, there's a 51, page 51, APO, you are talking about creating of jobs. The people of South Africa have been disadvantaged in so many things. The government of South Africa is facing the challenge of no jobs. So if you have a plan which is going to assist the country about creating jobs, we want to be part of that. We want to feel that we are doing ABC. And we don't want to feel that we are staying in towns. We cannot run away because we do have houses in these towns. We cannot say don't do things in towns. But our cry as this committee, the disadvantage, 20 years down the line, no transformation in rural areas. We are all saying that in this committee. With your help, with your strategies, we'll call you every now and then to check how far have you gone in so many things that you are interested in your plan and in your presentation. I want to tell you that we are seeing a good plan. It's upon you that this plan you will do and you monitor. Couple on what you are saying today. You all hear that we are not saying that we are sleeping, but we are telling you that we are not happy about the transformation, especially in you, in Zabi. Being leadership, you must have listen carefully. Don't go out of this committee saying that we're destructively criticizing you. We want you that you must work with this committee. One other thing that I wanted to check is, do you have tools to monitor and to make the provincial unions to account on this plan, and what are those tools? Because we'll be failing, and they will be saying, you have failed us. But if you don't tell us, how are you going to monitor them? As I've been reading this document, and as been sitting in some other committees where the minister was presenting your plan, you were struggling that the plan must be signed because you were facing challenges of unions that this executive is selling us out. But now here is the plan, and we'll monitor you as this committee. It's our role, but we'll assist and we'll advise. You know what, this thing of municipalities, please bring to us out of this meeting everything that we have tried to do in municipalities. For instance, you see this thing of provincial academies, we are not happy. Whilst you were speaking, I was noting, we are not happy. We are not yet done well. We have how many provinces? 9 provinces. Look at one province. Maybe you arrived in the provinces that they were already have infrastructure. Your annual budget, how much is it? When you were presenting, I've seen that, we are amongst those that you have. I'm suspecting that you are a billion company. And we don't know your plans, but together we can do more. As we are visiting these provinces, we'll be knocking at your door, saying that, hey, billionaires, we're not exaggerating. We're seeing your finances, even unlike us as a committee of the National Committee of Sport. We don't have the amounts that we are having. We are appreciating, but let's work together to check what can we do as a committee. Like, as we are hearing, we're just from Limpopo, we did get these reports that they are reflecting on it. If one other time, it's not the rule, if one other time this committee is coming with its own things, if one other time we're saying that, give us two of your leadership who are going to province ABC, in order that when we are going there as a sport committee, we invite clubs, we invite communities, we invite stakeholders, that you must listen. Maybe we are going to angles that you have been not there. It will assist you in order that we can say as this committee, come 5 years, we've worked with Iraq, we've assisted. Permittable would love to do that. By this plan, to me, I'm suspecting that, I'm thinking that you want to transform the country. Country is not yet transformed even in rugby, like any other sport, even in rugby. But we are struggling. Let's struggle together. By those words and questions, I wanted that my contribution must be like this, a statement of saying that we are appreciating, but we are not happy. And maybe, I don't know how many years that you were in the office, by coming to this, especially this committee, we'll try to call you every now and then to reason with you, to seek information, especially with this plan. This plan, if we can use it, we can change the lives of the youth, of the disabled people, of the women of South Africa. I thank you. Any intake on the questions we allow, we listen carefully. If there are follow-ups, I will give the members that opportunity. I'm sure we had about 11 members of this committee that they've taken you with confidence, with complaints, with proposals. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for those comments. And I think it goes without saying that all the comments that have been made here by the honourable members, we take to heart. We take it to heart and we take it seriously. And we appreciate the comments that are made by the political leadership very, very seriously. Seeing that you have given us the opportunity to provide some interaction, some response, I would like us to see this not as though we are just simply defending ourselves, but I would like our responses to be seen as engagement with the leadership, so that we can take heed and get help out of this session today. So I will ask my colleagues to respond to some of the questions, and I will respond as well. But as I say, Madam Chair, Honourable Chair, it's not as though we're just wanting to defend ourselves and prove that you are wrong. No, what we are saying is that we hear what you say, we take it to heart, and we just want to maybe shed some light on some of the issues that you have raised. Thank you. Mark, you wanted to respond to some of the points that were made earlier.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think to the first speaker who spoke about the transformation, firstly, our transformation strategy is aligned to the national plan. Our transformation strategy was presented to SASCOC and to the minister and was accepted. Our transformation strategy is not about something we have to do. It's about a survival strategy to grow our game, to broaden our base. It's about creating new followers for rugby and new rugby communities. So that's something that's forced on us. The vacuum the first speaker spoke about is a step up from Craven Week into under-20 rugby. And we were concerned about that some time back. We were worried, why are the boys playing at the Craven Week, scoring the tries and not making the step up? There was a study done by the Sports Science Center to look into the issues around that. And it was identified that the physical makeup of the athlete was different. It wasn't different because of its own doing. It was different due to the socioeconomic issues we face. A kid in the Eastern Cape sometimes goes to school without having a decent meal. Whereas a kid just using Johannesburg has a decent meal, walks across the road, has access to a gym. So from a nutritional point of view, he's well nourished. Access to the simple thing as a gym, there's no access in the room. You can run for days on end. You're not going to be well built as a guy who has access to those facilities. So when we identified those four academies in the Eastern Cape, and why the Eastern Cape, we applied for the 9 academies to the lottery. They only allowed 4, and they allowed 4 because those are the high-impact areas where we can see a return on investment quicker. They wanted to see something happening. Those academies, if one looks at what has come out of those academies, TP Rugby Union for the last 20 years never competed in an under-20 or under-19 final for 20 years. The first year they competed in the final and they won both finals. And they played against Border, another team who competed in that final. The second year, again, TP played in both finals and so did Borland. So those the return on that investment in the kids, you can see the difference in them. There's a boy called Sergio Peterson who came out of there. There's a lot of children who are now playing Super Rugby. So those academies are working. And if we want to make a difference in other regions, we need to have that type of intervention. Because we have those who have and those who have not. And we need to bridge that gap. And then we'll see the kids coming through. Transformation, our transformation plan is identifying a number of things. We're identifying the development of administrators. We talk about this committee not having enough women. So our plan is to identify them and bring people through the process, or through that process. It's to identify young athletes at a grassroots level. So there's two plans. One is the grassroots level, and we talk about academies. It's the boys who have the talent, is to take them to the next level to push them through the system. So our plan is an encompassing plan. It's not about something that's forced on us, and it's not something that is meaningless. It's a well-planned strategy that we put in place. If we look, getting to rugby is the grassroots level. When you talk about all the other areas,
Rugby Eastern Cape, we don't have to tell people about rugby. Rugby is the number one sport, cricket number two. Whereas in Gauteng, in some of the areas, we still have to teach in the culture. That's why we're introducing these modernized versions of rugby, tag rugby, raga kids, all those things. We're introducing it into them. In the schools, in this getting to rugby program, that's where we'll develop those regions and get them up to speed. So the transformation plan is a well thought out plan. It's a plan that we worked with government and SASCOC to get it put in place. And what you see is a highlight of the plan. The plan is a detailed document with action plans, who delivers what, who's accountable. It's a plan that our regions have bought into it. We voted this thing in at our last meeting. All the regions have voted on the plan, and it's a plan that's going to be live. As far as the franchise are concerned, the franchise are part of the regions and have to buy into the plan, so they will be measured accordingly. We'll be signing a document hopefully on Friday, if the minister's in town, because we know the cricket's going, might be playing in the final. We'll be signing a document that ties our organization down to the numbers that we put in there. So yes, we will be accountable to what we're putting on paper. We want to deliver. The tools, we spoke about the online tools. We got the footprint program where we can track where the kids are. It's not something that some guy sends us, these are the kids playing there. We know who the kids are. We got them on the database. We got online educational tools where we can train teachers, coaches, and players. So the online tools, all the tools that they spoke of earlier, those are the tools we put in place in preparation for this plan. Before, we had a lot of plans, but we did not measure it because you have to have people in all the regions. Now, it's an online plan. You can measure it. We can go and find. The gentleman mentioned about we're not in Ekurhuleni. Can I have that document, sir? In Ekurhuleni, there is in Kempton Park, Mullins, in the Duza, there's Kestrel, in Reiger Park, there's the rugby team. There are rugby teams, township rugby teams, and schools. And if you want to, we can give you the names of the schools that participate, no problem. They do participate in rugby. So, ma'am, thank you. That's my contribution.
Any other contribution?
Madam Chair, may I just maybe if you would indulge me, just talk at a little bit of a higher level about rugby and our country and society, and some of the issues that we face as a sport. I think maybe let me put my political leadership at ease and say categorically as a starting point that we do run rugby in the country. We do run rugby in the country as a leadership. And by that I'm saying that I've been very, very blessed. I know some of you may say it may be a curse, but I've been blessed to be in the position for 10 years. And I have never taken an instruction from anybody in this country. Never has a politician come to me to say, you must do ABC. Never has there been a right-wing Afrikaner, if I can put it that, or a high-ranking business person from somewhere in Stellenbosch. I have never been prescribed to, and I'm proud to be a South African on the basis that I have been able to exercise my office without any fear or favor. And I can say that categorically today before this honorable portfolio committee. And you can hold me to what I've just told you. I know that a lot of the honorable members look at our makeup. And I don't want to dwell on this point. Honorable Moteka made the point that we are all white males. Honorable Malatsi has tweeted, he said he's so disgusted to see the white representation of rugby sitting here in Parliament today, and so on and so on and so on. But the fact of the matter, Honorable Chair, is that as a person growing up in apartheid South Africa, I knew that to be politically correct, I saw myself as a kid, as a black person. I was part of the Black Lawyers Association. I just can't understand sometimes, you know, and I'm so happy that Honorable Abrahams has tried to set the record straight there. Let me not dwell on that point, because I think most people accept who is black and who's not black. But if you want to, you know, play political games, then it just goes into another minefield. But I forgive people if they think I'm white. But on a serious note, rugby has a legacy in our country. The legacy has been, and I'm not being emotional now or emotive. Rugby has always
President, feel free, this is South Africa. And anyone who is contributing, they're putting their own facts here. As we're sitting here, we are regarding that we are all South Africans, irrespective of our color and race. The only thing that you must know is that feel free and say what you want to say. We do hear what you are saying, but we have come to this committee of black and white, male and female of South Africa, of any race which is presented here today. So feel free. We are protected.
Thank you, Chairman. Rugby comes with baggage. There's no doubt about it. And that is why our late president decided to be decisive and stand at Ellis Park in 1995 so that he could take rugby in another direction. That's what he tried to do, and that is why I became involved, and I'm really privileged to be part of this game now after he took the stand at Ellis Park in 1995. So we in SARU, we want to do the right thing. We want to be part of the new South Africa. But the reality is that most of the people who are steeped, and Darren, you know what I'm talking about, the people who are steeped in rugby in this country, a lot of the people come from very, very conservative political views. And those are the people that we as the leadership sitting here today have to grapple with them and deal with them. And Honorable Sultani, you asked that question. The reality is, I have to look at a white boy and say to him, I've replaced you with a black boy because of transformation. That is part of the job. But you know, we try to balance the thing as best as we can. Sometimes we make mistakes, sometimes we can't. The fact of the matter is that we still have to win. We have to win because, and as Honorable Bergman said, the day we stop winning as a sport, the sponsors will run away, the international community will say, we're not worried, we're not interested in South African rugby anymore. So what we do as leaders, we are trying to balance this dynamic of winning, but also transforming. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge. It's a daily challenge. It gives us sleepless nights. Because, yes, I want 15 black people in the Springbok team. The reality is that it's going to take time for black, and when I say black, I'm talking colored, I'm talking Indian, I'm talking African black, for our children to be at the same standard as Mr. Alexander said, nutritionally, educationally, culturally, at the same level that whites have been for the last 100 and odd years. So we're trying to, as a society, as government, as as civic society, we're trying to uplift our children so that they can compete at the same level as whites. We don't want to just put a black or a colored boy in the team and say, because of your color, you're going to be in the team. He must be there because he's better than a white boy. But we have to equip him. We have to make sure he has the right nutrition, that he has the right training and skills and size and whatever. And so, as a leadership, Madam Chair, I just want to put the committee at ease. We will continue with transformation, but we have challenges as a society for transformation. And those challenges, I know that all of you share with us. Share in the pain with us. We will overcome this. Thank you.
Honorable members, I've said when we started this meeting, today our committee, I used not to have anyone to televise it. I'm suspecting everybody of South Africa, they do have an interest in rugby. Their reasons can be different, not the same. When I've said you must feel at home that we want to share our views, that how do we see a transformation in rugby? I'm sure everybody was contributing towards that. I was saying that I'm feeling that the gender question is not yet addressed in SARU. And some honorable members, they were saying that the question of erase, sometimes this question of erase, we don't understand it equally. Sometimes it's becoming a thorny issue, but a thorny issue which is there. But as I have said to our president, I've said in one meeting one other day, somebody was saying that, are we colors? Why you always when you are contributing call that colors? So maybe there's something that we don't understand on this note of racist and racism. But with our committee, we don't want to be the issue of the day. But if there are members who fail to raise it, it's right in order that you must reflect and correct. As I'm sitting here, I've been wondering, what is this thing called quotas? If, as we're sitting here today, somebody can interpret the quotas wrongly, because no one is telling, can you tell us this question of quotas, if you don't mind? Because as I'm sitting here, I don't know what does that mean by quotas. Some of us were thinking that e-quotas, it does mean that you take white boys to play or white women. Some of us will be saying e-quotas is something that you do pick those who have the skill. The question of skill, as they are saying, you will address with us. Through these billions of not ours that we don't know how do you budget, the only thing is this committee. We need to assist, as we have said in the plan. This question of innutrition, some in the morning, they woke up and walked about 20 to 30 kilometers, if it's not 10, going to school, not eating anything. When they get at school, they will be hungry, feeling dizzy. During the sport time, they will go to the field. But there are those who woke up and get full breakfast of everything, of your bacon and egg, of everything. There are advantages, as we are saying. There is those who have and those who have not, Deputy President. With this, we need to take each of us through in order that when we are contributing, we must know what kind of country that we are facing after the 1994. And let's have this plan, and let's take us step by step, that you must correct that. We know that this thing is happening even in our schools, even in our sport. They are not once off. We, as a country, were faced by this problem that today, as Umamu Beauty Zulana, taking my son Mputum and Sistanda to the multi-racial school, because I've seen the problem in our own schools, that I'm saying is rural schools. There are reasons about that. And we'll discover that those boys and girls who are in the multiracial schools, they do get everything. And then it's easy that when you're doing equals, you get people who are ready. Because they do have classes, they do have whatever to go and practice and gym. But when you come to MPEG or next to Kunu at my home, they are walking without eating food, without having a balanced food, even if they are going back. The only thing that is facing this committee and your good self, how do you assist to fill the gap? If really we have signed something like this, we want to put our nose in your plan, to knock at your door. Whenever we are visiting provinces doing oversight, in turn, we'll knock at your door, calling you, saying, we are from in this place, things are very horrible, but in some areas they are better. So let's go with that understanding, that this is committee of you. Without this committee and without you, we cannot transform Irabi special. We need each other. Irrespective of what you are saying, but the problem, we've got a passionate about the social cohesion of the sport, in particular rugby, today, whilst you're in front of us. With those words, we're saying that next time when we're calling you, you must know that we need you most. Honorable members, do you want to do any follow-ups? There is somebody who elected himself to be a deputy, the chair, and that somebody started to another, a committee just arrived, and I'm seeing now he's raising his hand because he elected himself to be deputizing myself. I'll give it to himself. Honorable Ntayiza, wait. May I see those hands that I've seen there up? Honorable Ntayiza, Honorable Bergman, Honorable Mutega, Honorable Malazi, Honorable Sultani, Honorable Manana. I cannot close Izandla. This is our day, honorable members. Those who don't feel to take second bite, they must not panicking. This is our committee, and we need to contribute, and we need to correct each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first apologize for coming late. I've got three committees today. This is the second committee. And when I came here, I could see...
You see, to have not more votes is like that.
I'm very much happy because I've not been looking forward to see Saru, his gentleman. And I nearly missed out on something very important. I can see that now discussions here have been very good. And when I came in here, I could see that some of their faces are not very much relaxed. But now, as you spoke, Chairperson, they are very much relaxed. Then I can see there's a way forward here. And I really feel that as well, going out on a trip to Limpopo, I felt that I should start here so that I don't miss out, because this is advantage. where I will automatically become a chairperson outside. Then I said, now, no, let me come, so that I'm not forgotten by the chairperson here. You know, Rabbi has been a problem. Yes, in school chairperson, now, I used to play soccer, but because many of the boys that were selected for soccer were from these urban areas, then I decided to go and play, take chances in rugby and boxing. Those are not soft codes, really. So that is why now I was looking forward to see. Then I could see, I could get it for you that now you have just leveled everything, you. So I feel I should thank you for that. No other comments because I've not been here. Thank you very much.
I thank you, Deputy Chair, Honorable Bachman.
Thank you, Chair. Just a major statement with regards to border rugby, but I, in terms of concern, I would actually like to find out what is happening with the Border Rugby Football Union in terms of a follow-up. Also, I just want to clarify myself. This plan could have been approved by the minister, it could have been approved by SASCOC, it could be approved by the unions. Ultimately, it's about the players, though. And I understand the plan. My problem with the plan is that it's a one-size-fits-all. So when we say 50%, 50%, 50%, 50%, there doesn't seem to be innovation. It just seems to be a stock standard. Here we go. Now, you have a development of what's labeled, maybe correctly or incorrectly, but it's perceived as a developmental league. And I think attendance shows you that, or sponsorship shows you that, fortunately or unfortunately. Again, that's not for me to judge. It's for me just to use as an example. Where's the innovation in taking that league and creating excitement around transformation? So what you ultimately have at the moment, and I see it as that, the Chair, you will appreciate the term, it looks like quotas. It smells like quotas, it looks like quotas, it tastes like quotas. In my opinion, it must be a quota. Now, for me, I would like to see, as I said, this innovation of bonus points, being awarded for teams that actually try and transform. We must push transformation. Transformation must happen. But how do we add it? How do we make it competitive? How do we keep it competitive? As Oregon says, the 50% of nothing, 25% of something is far better than 50% of nothing. In terms of race, sitting around this table, it gets just as heated as it is. There's colored people treated as white people. I don't partake in that type of discussion, but I must say that if you are a board trying to convince the rest of your rugby unions, and the change happens in a constructive manner. So for me, border rugby is a hard sore for me. I've asked questions about it. I've tried to engage with some of your officials here. And I keep on getting stonewalled around border rugby, and yet it's one of the it's a lovely example of how we threw resources into it. And I take what Ms. Daddy Zander said about transformation and what's happening in areas like in the Eastern Cape because of the academies. But here we're talking about a union, an end result, and not an input. So please take from me, from my side, as I say, I want transformation. I just don't believe that quotas is the way to go.
Thank you, Honorable Bergman, Honorable Malat, Honorable Mutega first.
Thank you very much, Chair, for this second opportunity. Chair, I must say, the areas that rugby is not happening, it seems they are far to get a chance because there are no facilities and academics and whatever, as the first responders have indicated the reasons why they are, it's more easy to do it in Eastern Cape than in other areas you have mentioned. And then on the point of the response of the first respondent, I want to say, Chair, we are introducing sports in general in our areas, in our constituencies and all that. And then, when you come here and then
you get a person telling you that it is happening in your area and you say it's not happening. I want to tell this table that in Skogunaland, I'm responsible for about 16 teams. I've introduced under 15 soccer netball, the juniors soccer netball. I'm trying to get where can I find rugby. I can't find it because things are not happening. And you don't even know where to knock around Skukune area at all. In Igruleni, townships, there's no rugby happening. The gentleman has mentioned two cities or in towns and the Duz out of all townships in Igruleni. Do we have to celebrate that? I don't think so. This is the proof. This is what I'm doing in the community. So if you come here and tell me I'm lying, things are happening in my area, you are insulting the work that I'm doing as a public representative. So I was just alluding to that.
Excuse me. No one said they are lying, Honorable Member. No one used that thing.
Something looking like that. Okay.
No.
Yeah. Almost something like that. Okay. So what I'm saying is, let us see in the plan when do those areas we're talking about. I'm just mentioning both Kukune because I know, but not really we're saying it, everything must happen there. I'm talking about other areas where there's no rugby. Let us hear from the plan when is going to start happening and the time frame, so that we can know exactly when is the rugby going to the rural areas. We also represent other areas. It's not like we're talking our own homes. Alfred is in Eastern Cape. It's my constituency. I want to see things happen in Bizana, as the chair used to say here. So let us hear. The plan must tell us the rural areas, when are they going to start benefiting? Except this thing of saying it is heavily and then you went as city, and the rural and township. Thank you.
Honorable members, I'll not give you platform if you to repeat what we have requested, because honorable, the one that is just landed, he presented the cry of the rural areas that there were no facilities for Iraq. But don't make things as if you didn't say anything. I won't say stop, but I'm saying that when we're doing the follow-ups, we must not re-raise the questions that were raised and that they were answered. Let's try, if your question was not answered, or you are not satisfied, but not your reference, please, Honorable Members. We have said that from the very onset, Honorable, complained that the rugby is in township in Kuruleng, not in rural areas. And if from the very onset, you think Sikukuni area. So we are saying we are here for 5 years, we'll check with USARU, what can we do if we want that you must assist to Sikukuni or to Bizana or to wherever. We are saying that you are not planning with us, but as a committee, sometimes we'll be knocking, saying that, hey, I'm from this area. I've seen the progress. I couldn't see the progress. What can we do? So we are appreciating to do that. Honorable Mother.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to start by being the bearer of bad news that the Proteas lost by 4 wickets. But on to more pressing matters, Chair. Just now. But on to more pressing matters, Chair. I just want to do a follow-up to the initial question I asked, and I
I don't get a sense that it was answered. There was a reference to the number of academies and their geographical placing, and I get, you know, I understand that they are placed in areas of maximum impact, as I alluded to. But also, if we're talking about breaking new ground, it's also infiltrating, you know, new markets of potential, and balancing that with existing markets of potential. The Eastern Cape is an existing market of potential. We have to leverage it. But if we were to align this with now your current plan that goes into introducing rugby at schools, therefore one would think it would be even more prudent to align those interventions in markets that are not, you know, being catered to currently, so that the pool of those potential rugby players that can benefit from the availability of the provincial academies can be easily identified. And this has nothing to do with geographical space per se, but with access to top coaches, access to facilities. And the second question being that the measure of a successful academy system is not only in the number of players that go on to play professionally in the elite teams, but more so on their progression into the national teams. You know, so in as much as I get that 24 of the graduates from the academies have gotten professional contracts in the preceding financial year, I'd be even more curious to find out how many of those have been able to break into the Springboks team or the National Under-20s team, because that will also be an indicator of, you know, the level of quality that we produce. Because at this rate, out of the 24, I cannot measure whether those were first team players, or fringe players, you know, what was the total number of games that they played. So we can get into a whole number of variables about it. But if we were to get a sense of out of those 24 players that, you know, came through the academy systems and got professional contracts, how many of them got into the Springboks team, if any, and how many of those are current members of the team. But on the second issue of school sports, you know, there is a huge mismatch between the number of Springboks that private schools like, you know, your Grey College and Powell Gymnasium are able to produce. And that we understand that is historically linked to the quality of resources that they have at their disposal. What I'm curious about is whether SARU has considered or would consider a system where schools like Dale College, which is able, you know, it attracts a whole number of young black kids in there, and it's produced in the rugby competitive school, whether SARU, as part of ensuring that kids from disadvantaged background who are at least at a very competitive stage have the sort of access to expertise that SARU has in its school, like what Cricket South Africa did, which is to appoint a full-time cricket coach aligned to that school. And that has already improved their performance. They remained unbeaten last year in the Eastern and the Western Cape. You know, that is correlated to that. And whether rugby South Africa would consider saying these schools that have potential as part of our strategies, are we going to then allocate some of the network of coaches that we have and administrators that we have in liaison with the provincial unions and help in terms of coaching in there to improve their skills, so that from those pool of people that are sort of in the middle category, that are already competitive, that are already not hamstrung by various barriers that hold back many young black people, such as nutrition and sociological factors, that those at least have access to the sort of expertise that you easily have at your disposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. I'm having just a right question on what your Honorable was reflecting on. I've heard that when you were responding in the four provinces that Ulotari gave you the money to do what we're talking about, I will ask that if in this coming year have you already applied for the rest of five, which is you didn't. You have said most. You wanted nine. Out of nine, Lothar gave you four, and then you are left with five. I would love to check, because we are going for a new financial year, that have you already applied, and I will be happy if
can reflect on that, because seemingly these provincial academics, they are not funded by you. You ask money for Ulotas, and Ulotas didn't give you 9, gave you 4, and we left with 5. Somebody must give us that information. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Malat. Honorable Filton.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of nutrition, I'm glad that it's part of your key points there. You know, when I was president of Shonsai Rugby in 2008, it's one thing that I used to harp upon, that without proper balanced nutrition, you can't develop a top-class rugby player. You need that physique. Just 3 questions of mine, too, which were not addressed. One is how you propose to ensure that you actually stop the exodus rather of players from smaller unions to better paying ones. I would like to know exactly how you are addressing that one. And the next one is the percentage of the present council. How many black people in percentage terms are in that? I'm sure you've got that stats there already. And then the last one is your proposed 50% in the Springbok team. I'll say there may be others. You know, why pick on the year 2019? What is significant about that? Because you're talking about 35%, you know, immediately, and we still another 4 years to go. Why only then do you think we'll get to 50%? I'm not worried about the percentage. I'm thinking about the year. I want to know how you came to the year. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. My follow-up question, Chair, is that I have I've raised a concern about the universities, but after the president, I was just feeling sorry for him because he was like, he feels offended. You made us to feel offended, but at least you addressed that, because when I was checking here on my follow-up question of mine, especially the Stellenbosch, as I was raising the university, the varsity cups, that the CEO, head coach, managers under 20 coach, the seven coach academies, general manager, head of amateur in high performance centers, all of them, the race, it's not... Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Musi.
Thank you, Chairperson. And Pete. There was a question that I asked about talent identification, and I did not hear you answering it, because really I had wanted to see, you know, the scope of that on how you do it when you search for talent. I was very much interested in that. But the other question that I asked, Chairperson, is that was issue on racism. And even though it came as a joke, it's a serious thing, because we have seen it, you know, we are seeing it happen, especially in schools. I must indicate that schools have got separate, you know, hostels for their students, and even if they play rugby, that has been practiced and it is happening. And then I thought you perhaps elaborate on it so that one would grasp something out of what you're going to say, so that one would perhaps be able to go back to some schools that are practicing that and share with them what you shared with the committee. But Chairperson, the other question that I I'm sorry that it had to be coupled with some questions of the tweet and blah blah of, you know, males being discussed in some members. No, I was not actually referring. I was actually asking a genuine question, that if there is a total control of the executive of you, Mr. Hawkins, and the rest of rugby, then genuinely speaking and seriously speaking, there must be alignment of constitution. There must be compatibility of the constitutions of ZARU and of provincial union chapters. That's basically what I was saying. And I actually did not hear you answering it directly. Maybe it's a question of you indicating that, you know, this is high level of rugby. Perhaps it was a high question, and perhaps out of what you said, I'm to pick up certain things. Like you indicated that, you know, rugby has been ran or. Yeah, but perhaps to indicate that within rugby, there are you know, strong conservative ideas of certain communities, of certain people, that perhaps one should just take it like that and say, no, it's fine. Let us give them time, and perhaps with time, things will be corrected. But the other question that I wanted to hear from you that you might not be aware of, Honorable Ralohoma indicated there is a school in Zanene where it's called Ben Foster High School, and there are four students there, and we had gone there. We promised the principal of the school that they would look into the matter. You might not be aware of that, but I thought you'd just say, answer and say, we are going to do a follow-up on that, which I want you to go into, and thank you, Chairperson.
These are last questions, and Honorable Musi, I'm giving you the assurance that I don't think this question of erase or it was a joke. It must not, if you feel that you raise a question and then you feel that it was a joke. We cannot. We're not joking here. And on that basis, I was listening to everybody. I'll intervene if some question of members, people are making them as a joke. But we have raised that, but I don't know why we are raising that, but we have got it right. We are not joking here. We are building the country. Whoever you feel that he or she was joking, we cannot joke when we're sitting in this kind of meeting. Honorable President, Honorable Deputy President, and the team, those are follow-up questions. It's upon you to direct, President.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just on the numbers as asked, the council is 30% black, and the Executive Council is 72% black. 72. Yeah. Or the board. And then the General Council is 30% black. The overarching one. In terms of the talent identification, through our coaching development and through our talent identification long-term plan, which is the plans that have been rolled out by SASCOC, which we endorse, we are rolling out talent scouts and talent identifiers throughout the unions. We employ all of those individuals. They work within a school's network, and they get allocated schools in the region, and they have the responsibility to go to all of those schools, get all of those coaches into a network, and through that we identify the talent that we take up to the academy level. It's quite an extensive program, and it's obviously difficult to get up to all of the areas, but I think we cover the more than 80% of the areas in that regard. On the academies itself, academies only is in their third year. Most of those kids are 20 years old, so very few of them are going to be in the Springbok team. The best black players get recruited by the big unions at the age of 14 and 15, and they are within the franchise academy systems, and most likely they are the guys that actually can get to the Springboks. On a success level, we've had five or six players playing Super Rugby. We've had a number of players playing Currie Cup and Vodacom, but those are the next level of rugby players and not necessarily the Springboks. Our aim is to get two or three Springboks out of that environment that are not bought by the bigger unions. Stop the exodus, other than actually getting them in the academy, is impossible to stop. You cannot tell an individual that he must stay in an environment for 10,000 rand when somebody else is offering him 100,000 rand a month. It's a very simple equation, actually, in terms of the money. If I look to the sevens, I've just got to correct the fact there. The coach of the national team is Neil Powell. Yes, he's white. The head of the national sevens team is Sebastian Prim. He is black. The coach of the women's sevens team is Renfrew Danville. He's black. The manager of the women's system is Tanar Pile. She's a female. She's black. The head of the academy coach is Paul Delport. He's black. And the head of the system there is Mario Schumann. He's white. So those are factually incorrect. And I just need to point that out. In terms of border, the reality with border is that why did we intervene in the first instance? And there's no reason actually to hide anything around it. They were in such deep financial problems that there was going to be foreclosure. There was a lot of creditors that were lining up and that was willing to go to court, not even withstanding the fact that over a 3-4 year period, no pay-as-you-earn, et cetera, was paid to SARS, and there was a very serious case about SARS. SARS was actually the easiest to deal with. We went to SARS and paid the first book component, and we were negotiating getting a settlement on the second component. In terms of the creditors, we lined up all of the creditors. A number came out of the woodwork as we were going on, some of them frivolous claims, but other legit claims. I think we've got an agreement with everybody there in the place. To be brutally honest, we're finding it very difficult at the moment. We've got an administrator there. We've got the rugby under control. I've got no doubt about that. We've got our Moby unit there. They are coaching the team. We've got our academy there. We've got our under 21 structure in place, and we've got the senior team in place. As it stands, there's no money to contract players. They've got two contracted players, and very much like other unions that get into financial troubles, you first get out of the financial troubles and then you start contracting. And yet there's enough club players and there's enough other players that we can utilize. There is constant political intervention in terms of the old administration, but we deal with that through the president. It'll take us, the final business plan is coming to the executive of SA Rugby on the 31st of March. We reckon it'll take us 3 years to get that union back onto track, getting all of the debt out of the way, getting the systems back into track, and then we can hand it back to the executive of the Border Rugby Union. But, you know, it's also a broken window theory. You know, we need to uplift the stadium, we need to uplift the area, we need to invest quite a bit, get the sponsors back, and the sponsors will only come back when they actually see a set of financials that are not a couple of million in the red. So, yes, it is an ongoing process. Rugby-wise, I think we will survive a lot quicker and we'll be able to do something. Administrative-wise, we're facing challenges and intervention. It is very difficult to manage a union remotely. Yes, we have an administrator there, but we are now populating it with financial managers, HR managers, et cetera, to get us back onto track. There is a defined business plan and a defined timeline on that, which is necessary in circumstances like that. I think in general, I don't, you know, we look at this document and we come before the portfolio committee. It is extremely difficult to put the 160-page transformation implementation plan into 12 slides. It's extremely difficult to explain everything that is happening in a small presentation like that. We are, on a daily basis, through our online tools, Mervyn can tell me each and every day in terms of the dashboard through the tools that Samantha manages and has lined up on what is the situation in play. We don't only look at players, we look at the amount of time they play. It's the easiest thing in the world to select six black players and each put them for a minute on the pitch. Doesn't make a difference. We actually look at time, how much time do they play. Those are the things that we look at. And I take point and take note of the fact that there's no one single solution. we don't approach it as a single solution. We've got a target for the country as a whole. We accept that in certain areas there will be more players and in other areas there will be less players. And we manage that process, and it's a constant process. And where we see there's lacking, we engage, and it is a collaborative process. You know, we can stand there with a whip and you will get resistance, or we can all work together and say, guys, this is where we are, this is what we promised to do, and this is what we will deliver on. We're not stupid about what we do. If we see we're unable to actually reach a target, we will have to revisit. This was our first shot at that target. And say, this is what we think we can manage. And if you look at it, we're hitting most of those targets as it is. I would agree 100% that unless we actually do proper work on women and females within a structure, we're going to be lacking in 5 years' time again. And that is something that we address through our unions. But we also are dependent on the fact that the unions must do their work, and then we're also obviously dependent on people actually putting up their hand, wanting to be part of this mad, crazy game that we are in and that we all love. And you know, it is a tough environment to break into, and I think we need to break down those barriers to ensure that it is easier for them to get there. And then probably the most difficult question to answer is constitutional alignment. You know, there's a saying that turkeys don't vote for Christmas. You know, it is a constitutional alignment. You need a 75% vote. So if three of the members don't vote for that, we struggle. But we've decided not to fight, not to win every battle, but rather, you know, win the war in the end. So we're slowly changing our constitution in terms of the clauses and clawing it back without too many people noticing that we're doing it. At the moment, it is, you know, unions have never had to hand in their financials, their budgets, their applications, or anything on that base. All of that has to go to the finance committee. We're now saying that if you don't do that, you won't get your broadcasting, your sponsorship, etc., etc. So we're slowly clawing back instead of trying a one big bang approach, because that will just be met with resistance, and you literally three unions say no, and we can't get to a result. The reality is we have not embarked on something that we don't think we can get it to deliver or close to deliverance. You know, we also open and honest. We did not come to this committee and put graphs on that we can. You know, there's lies and statistics. You know, we gave you the numbers. We had a movement over the last 10 years, and there was a definite decline in that. If we don't intervene, there will be a constant decline. And the next time we're here, you guys will be shouting at us instead of being positive and giving us advice. And we need to do something. We actually believe in what we're doing, and that's the reason why we got it past our board. Yes, there's always going to be resistance. You can sit around the table and look a guy in the eye and know whether he wants to transform. And it's not the fact that it's a number on the table. It's whether he actually transforms his mind to understand that if we don't change the face and the look of this organization, it will not be around. And it won't be this committee that will close it. It won't be this committee. It won't be the Minister of Sport or the president of this country that will close it. And business will close it. It will not be sustainable. People will not go and watch the product. They will vote with their feet, and they'll vote very lightly. And we will close our doors in 6-7 years' time, and that will be our legacy, and we refuse to be part of that legacy. We'll rather try our best and fail than just sit back and let it run on.
Honourable members, I'm suspecting we've utilized our day, and this is our first time that we have this engagement with you, Saru. We're hoping that we'll keep on doing what we're doing. I don't think that this is the first and the last day that we're calling you, but our call will be on monitoring and wanting you to achieve on a strategic transformation plan. If you don't, we don't call you and assist, not to fire questions, we have a right to do that, but also want to be part of this transformation plan, because we're a committee who's doing it oversight. So the oversight that we must do, even to your good selves, is to look on the time frames, on the presentation,
on the outstanding issues that we are thinking they are still outstanding issues, and would love, as we are saying, that you must be honest to us, those things that are challenges to you, we need to share if we can't assist. But as long you have told us, even your presentation, that you do have challenges, your challenges must be our challenges, and then we'll advise, and every now and then we'll seek to check how far with these challenges. Are you getting there? If not, what can we do, being South Africans, that we must meet each other advice? So by these words, I'm saying that this is the first time that we are meeting you. We've been longing to meet you, because as a committee, as we're sitting here, we have so many letters complaining, and we can't just respond to those letters without information. As Uchairperson, there are even those letters that you can't even share with the committee, because others, without information, how can you respond? But some other provinces, that they do have their problems in the provinces, without exhausting their provinces, they will write to this committee. But this committee, it doesn't take every letter that are coming to respond, because we can miss the boat that we are thinking that it, we know all. So by these words, President, nice to have you here, and we are well informed. We are thinking, if some of us as members, we are not happy with some of your responses, this is not the end of the day. And I've asked information, the information that maybe you didn't give, the stats that were just randomly saying that, I've seen in the presentation that you are working according to the demarcation of municipalities. But when I was reading your document, my interest as a chairperson is to know, where are you thinking that you can create some jobs for youth and disabled? And we need to know, in order that we must inform communities. You know, and if we're just silent, as if we don't know what we are doing, everybody will thinking that Iraq is not trying to transform. We are the people who are in contact with these provinces in our constituents. Your deliverables, we need to pronounce on them. Whilst we are saying that maybe if we went in this oversight, provinces will come across with some challenges. We'll try to talk to you, President, and your colleagues. And sometimes you'll appreciate that when I'm from Gandol in Bizan, saying that what I've seen there, what can you do as leaders? And then we own as Ilanduk. And that problem of Sikukuni, which area in Sikukuni that is possible of having rugby players, or imagine that you must assist in order that the honorable of that area will be proud to stay in the area. As a committee, we have spoken to SARU, and SARU is trying to identify in your area the rugby people who are not assisted. We know that your budget is your budget, it's not for our committee. But sometimes, as this committee, we have agreed that whoever's coming will be knocking, saying that, hey, we've seen ABC. That's working together, we can do more. We are suspecting that these 5 years that will be in the office, we need to interact with every stakeholder in sport in order that we must see this change. And even if we're debating, we'll be saying that since we came in this committee, we've noticed ABC, we've achieved ABC, we're still having problems in ABC. So I'm suspecting that's the aim of calling you to come and share and criticize you constructively, but at the end of the day, we must have a product that you are saying that this is our product. These goals will be achieving by working together. Thank you so much. The meeting again.
Sorry. Okay, I'll go last.
Please, I've said, after my closing remark, there is this young, I've got two young people in this comic, is Honorable Malase and Honorable Manan. They can always jump. And I don't know if whichever seniors close the meeting with the remarks, and there comes the young member jumping. The one that I must break this protocol of comic. Just 2 minutes. Just a minute, I mean.
I didn't want to break protocol, but I forgot this point earlier, that I just want to express that there's the issue of parliamentary questions here, which for us are a platform of, while these interactions are scheduled to take place and may take time, so that we can use in doing our job. And there hasn't been much joy in responses to parliamentary questions, and I just wanted to highlight that here. Chair, it wasn't an attempt to match up with Honorable Manana or anything. It was just to do this. I didn't want to express it in other platforms than this. Thank you.
Point taken, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Honorable Chair. In the SARU annual report, it gives, for example, what the salaries are of the leadership of SARU. I'm just responding to the Honorable Malase. But that's not, I only say that now because I know Honorable Malase is talking about parliamentary questions. But what I wanted to say, Honorable Chair, is that we as SARU want to thank you and the Honorable Members of Parliament for allowing us here in your busy schedule to take time out with us to engage us. Without your engagement, we don't know how to judge ourselves. So we see this as an opportunity to go back and to workshop what you have said. Finally, may I say that it is customary within our organization that wherever we go, wherever we are invited, we give small gifts. We have brought small gifts for each honorable member. It is please have a look as honorable members. It is so insignificant. It is not something that the media will write about. But we would like to leave all of you honorable members with a small gift from SARU. And my CEO was saying that he didn't hand it out at the beginning because he didn't want to influence your position against us. No, that's a joke. But thank you very much.
Honorable member, I don't know whether we are going to declare, but it seems as if this small presence, according to the parliament, if we've got something more than 1,000, we have increased
78 grand.
You can take that gift, but it declare.
Yeah.
So, who's supposed to give it to them? I'm very sorry, we didn't introduce our staff. I'm suspecting that it was rude. Sune, as a committee secretary, I'm having... I'm having Tebogo as a content advisor of the committee. I'm having Mpumzi as a researcher. I'm having Kinezo from the office of the minister, there she is. I'm having Faith as a media person, the one who's always wanting me that I must talk to Barbara, and she's getting very difficult because I hate that. I'm having Unonweba as our committee secretary. I'm having that girl called Bulelo as my executive secretary. Somebody from the office must take care, from your office must take care of distributing. It's from the SARU. They must take care in order that those who have photos can take pictures. Brackman. Who next? Don't be jealous, Mr. Kramer. Sami, don't take them. Thank you, Honorable President and Deputy President and your colleagues. These are very elegant diaries. I'm suspecting there's no one who's going to say you bribed us, and thanks that you gave us after the meeting in order that you must be very contributing. Thank you so much. Honorable members, we still have outstanding issues of the committee. Thank you. Thank you so much. The only one.
He's defending well. Well, they are defending that thing, obviously. I like but the way that he's saying that they are defending it. But on the other hand, what do you say?
Yeah, time is nice.
Very nice. That's a nice. It is, no? Instagram. Instagram. You must check me on Instagram.
Yeah, thank me. That is the 777.
Why do you guys have difficult names?
Honorable members, let's finish our. We are left with our minutes. Let's go to the minutes of 18 March. Huh? 18 March.
Okay.
Okay. Page 1. Thank you, Chairperson. The apologies, I was present, I arrived late, but I was present, thank you. When did you sign the register? It was Wednesday, wait, okay. We arrived late, let's correct that. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Any mover? Honorable Verhom is moving that these are true reflection of our minutes. Any second? Honorable Musi. Minutes are adopted and do you want any matters arising on the minutes? Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4. And page 5. May I sign the minutes that are true, Honorable Malaza is saying really, no matters arising, minutes are correct and we've done with the minutes. Announcements. I don't have announcement except that our staff must say something about Limpopo. Honorable members, it was approved, our trip, ne? Mm-hmm. Eh? Yes, politically, and Honorable Ralhom will be leading the committee delegation. Honorable Musi, that's what we have agreed. That I'm not going, it's going to be Honorable Musi. That's why Honorable Ralhom is late in the delegation. Honorable Manana, now she's asking to be excused. Honorable Malatse is going, Honorable Bergman is going, and who else? Honorable Ntsayiza. This delegation is going to Limpopo. It's those who were part of our visit of the oversight. They are doing now a follow-up on that. And there is a challenge, Honorable Nanceba was saying, we need to know these things in order that their office and our office visit, which happens in that, if I was supposed to go and I'm no longer going, they must reapply again, saying that is not beauty, it's honorable mercy. But these rules, I'm sure chairperson, where house chairperson, may weep, we need to raise with the committee session, because sometimes this thing, it happened that you have an emergency, and we don't have time to reapply. To substitute a member of a committee by another member, as a red tape, sometimes as if we're not governing, as this committee governing our affairs as a committee, we need to take this thing up. I will ask the Honorable, the whip, to take it up. I don't think it's right. Sometimes officials, when they are sitting down, they want us to feel that we must be felt. Thank you, Honorable Members. People can head of this parliament.